Welcome to Not Enough Champagne, a podcast whose benefits are self-evident. My name's Corey Hazelhurst, and my partner in propaganda is Steve Haynes.
Hey, Corey.
And I'll tell you what, Steve, apparently the economic benefits of leaving the EU are also self-evident. That's according to the Chancellor of the Exchequer, or to give him his proper title, the SAG, who's refused to make any impact assessments on Boris Johnson's new Brexit deal.
I'm absolutely shocked, that they would fail yet again to provide any impact assessments in relation to Brexit.
It's been nearly 3 weeks since we talked about the government's plans for leaving the European Union, and 3 weeks is about 7 months in Brexit years.
But haven't they been a glorious 3 weeks?
That wasn't the first adjective that came to mind, Steve. So let's see where we are. When we last spoke, I believe it was about October the 5th we spoke about this, Boris Johnson had stood up at Tory party conference and talked about his new deal with the EU, which was a take-it-or-leave-it deal. And the government was making big no-deal noises, putting in a big advertising campaign, because obviously we were going to leave on the 31st of October. Do or die, Steve. And we wondered on that episode why the government didn't just push for a deal, put a border down the Irish Sea, alienate the DUP, which gives Boris Johnson the perfect excuse to go for a snap election. And blow me, Steve.
We got something right.
If Boris Johnson doesn't just do exactly that.
See, we are totally in step with Dominic Cummings' master plan.
If we understand it, Steve, I don't think it's a master plan.
No, it's definitely not a master plan.
I feel like it's that old joke, isn't it, about asking someone for directions and saying, well, I wouldn't start from here. I don't think this is how they wargamed it.
No, not at all.
What's actually in Boris Johnson's slightly revised deal? Again, as usual, we are indebted to Ian Dunt. It's usually either Ian Dunt or Stephen Bush. Ian Dunt has called this the hardest of hard Brexits. The UK would be out of the single market, it would be out of the customs union, and replace that with a free trade agreement between the UK and the EU. And obviously that means that the UK can diverge from EU regulations. In fact, there's a leak reported in the Financial Times today saying that that means they're going to, the government plans to, say, undermine the EU workers' rights, things like that. The way they then go to deal with the Irish border issue, which happens if you're out of the EU's regulatory orbit, originally Theresa May signed up to the backstop. This was a massive bone of contention, if you remember, with the ERG. And what Boris Johnson has done is replace it essentially with a front stop. And basically what was the safety net is now actually going to be the end point. There are going to be checks on the Irish Sea, and there's going to be EU customs officials doing lots and lots of paperwork, because obviously the thing I remember from the Leave campaign is that they said that the problem with being in the EU, Steve, is there's just not enough paperwork, and if we leave the EU, we'll have the sovereignty to introduce more paperwork and regulations.
Yeah, quite literally, what Boris Johnson has actually achieved here is to put a border in between parts of the United Kingdom. It's actually, in many ways, kind of amazing that the so-called Conservative and Unionist Party have actually kind of gone down this route, but given the options, this was the only thing that was left for them.
Well, do you remember, there was a politician, Steve, wasn't there? And he went to the DUP conference and he said that there was no way that any government could put a border down the Irish Sea. Which politician was that?
Was that by any chance Boris Johnson?
Is he related to Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister?
I think he might in fact actually be the same person, though. This might have been two or three Boris Johnsons ago.
Are we saying that Boris Johnson is like Vince Cable? There are multiple iterations of Boris Johnson, or are we just saying that he's just an inveterate liar?
I think he's just an inveterate liar.
Okay. And the other thing is that Theresa May said that no British Prime Minister could accept putting a border down the Irish Sea. Except she's quite happy to accept that and vote for the deal when she's a backbencher.
You've almost got to laugh. This is 100% an example here of Theresa May putting the party before her principles. She was guided by a principle of not wanting to separate up the UK in this way. And the minute she's not on the hook the hook for it. She, for the good of the party, she's just kind of hand-waving it off and saying, yep, yeah, this is fine, this is fine. I may not like it, but this is the least damaging option. It's like, no, Theresa, you made a point about this. And really, every single journalist that should ever come in contact with her from now on should be asking her about that decision.
To be fair, judging by what journalists have said about meeting with Theresa May for lunch, they're probably going to be too busy falling asleep to actually ask her questions about her past record. Leaving aside the fact this deal may well lead to the breakup of the UK, let's just put that on the back burner.
In multiple ways, don't forget.
That's
two separate parts of the UK could leave as a result of this.
But just leave that aside for a second. The UK and a changing Europe estimate the economic damage that this does would affect national GDP by between 2.3% and 7% over 10 years. There's two, I think, interesting political implications of this. One of them is that actually, one thing that in Romania we have been assuming is, or that has been argued, is that the EU would not reopen the withdrawal agreement. And yet, actually, it does seem that part of the withdrawal agreement was reopened. Admittedly, I think I'm right in saying that the border down the Irish Sea was the EU's original idea. So, take that caveat aside, actually, the EU did reopen the withdrawal agreement. It does seem from some of the reporting that Merkel was scared by Johnson's posturing on no deal. And actually, Jean-Claude Juncker has helped Boris Johnson try and sell the deal in the way he wanted. At the press conference Juncker and Johnson did, Juncker does come out and say, look, the choice is between this deal or no deal. What does that suggest, do you think, about the politics within the EU27 at this point?
I think it's still really much about positioning, about the blame game, potentially, for a no-deal or a potential no-deal Brexit. I think this is very much probably a bit of a Hail Mary pass on their end, and given what's been negotiated is something they were happy with to begin with. They've not really lost anything from it at all. So it's not really like Johnson's negotiated hard and really found something and absolutely taken it to the EU and to Merkel and to Macron. No, he's just kind of actually backtracked to what they proposed to begin with, so he's actually lost ground. So because the EU hasn't lost anything, really, and they can make some nice friendly overtures to Boris Johnson, they can at the very least try and minimise the potential blame that can be thrust upon them if everything goes effectively tits up in the UK in regards to the deal. And they can say, hey, if you guys had no deal, it was nothing to do with us.
The second big political implication is the breaking of the DUP and the Tory government. Now, on one level, that's possibly understandable because the deal that was signed between the DUP's chief whip and Gavin Williamson, who was then Theresa May's chief whip, and then disgraced himself and now is back as education secretary because apparently God has a sick sense of humour. That only lasted until the end of that current parliament anyway. And that current parliament ended when Boris Johnson illegally prorogued it. So in one sense, it's not surprising. But then given the other parliamentary votes this week, and it's going to be another one of those weeks where we have a Queen's speech and we're not going to talk about the Queen's speech and what's in it. But the DUP did back the government on the Queen's speech, even if they didn't necessarily back the government on all the important votes this week. So how far do you think there is a break between the DUP and the government?
To be honest, I haven't a clue. I suspect it will be almost come down to, it very much depends on what the vote is on as to what they will actually act upon. I suspect if it comes down to, you know, a vote of confidence in the government, they'll vote for the government. I don't think they're going to basically try and put the government in a position where they could be ousted from power. So I think in that regards, they're still on board. But equally, because of the nature of the deal that's been done, they're not on board the Tory Party Brexit Express anymore. They're going to end up voting against a lot of it because it spits in the face of what they believe, which is unionism.
Maybe the more interesting split is the rift between the ERG and the DUP, which was seen as, or certainly was briefed by a few ERG figures, as being very, very important because the ERG believes in unionism. Right up until the point that they didn't.
Yeah, well, the ERG doesn't have any beliefs other than getting out of the EU, in effect, and anything else they say is effectively just whatever window dressing is most appropriate to help them achieve that aim at that point in time. But we've seen that time and time again.
Well, judging from how they voted for Theresa May's deal, or rather they voted against Theresa May's deal, you can't even say they believe in leaving the EU.
No.
We have, again, it's not quite, as you say, it's not quite a new deal. It's been...
It's Theresa May deals plus.
Yes. Or actually, in many ways, Theresa May... Yeah, Theresa May's deal minus. But it was negotiated by an older Tony and Steve.
Oh, that must make it more acceptable.
Absolutely. He got the EU to man up. And so it's Theresa May's deal plus toxic masculinity.
Yeah.
Plus patriarchy. Which was enough to unite the Tory party, which is nice.
Good for them. There is something that can unite them, and it's just toxic masculinity and patriarchy.
To be fair, the reason why the Tory party is united is because they expelled 21 from their party,
yeah,
which maybe helps. Boris Johnson then tried to get the deal through the House of Commons, and he's been trying to do that for about a week, and faced two major obstacles in doing that. The first one happened last Saturday, when the House of Commons voted for an Oliver Letwin amendment, which essentially... The Benn Act, which forces the government to ask for an extension, that took place until the government has passed every single bit of Brexit-related legislation. And we did a podcast on the legislation that is needed to pass in order for Brexit to happen. I think the start of, I want to say the start of 2018. And so there's things like an immigration bill, a trade bill, all that kind of stuff. All that needs to be passed. But then the really banterific votes in the House of Commons this week took place on Tuesday, in which there was a vote for Boris Johnson's deal on a second reading with a majority of 30, which in many ways is quite significant. So it's the first, because of it's the first time that the House of Commons has found a majority for a Brexit related thing,
yeah,
since the Brady Amendment. But as we know, the Brady Amendment was just wishful thinking and unicorns, whereas this is actually a thing that the EU had agreed on.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's the first time the House of Commons found a majority for a version of reality.
Yeah, and it also is quite interesting when you look at the makeup of that majority as well, in effect of looking at who voted for it on the opposition benches and that kind of thing. There were a number of Labour people who had to vote for it in order to get to that majority, but essentially... They're not all guaranteed actually to vote for it when it when it comes back again, because a number of them, like I think Lisa Nandy, basically said, "Well, we want to amend this, so let's get it to the committee stage."
Yes, because Labour MPs voting for or abstaining on bills so they can amend it in committee stage has never been politically problematic for them at all.
No, I mean, I'm not saying it's good politics, but it does basically mean that you can't guarantee that all of those Labour votes are going to stick around at the next reading.
And indeed, they did not stick around for 50 minutes, because then the House of Commons voted on a programme motion. And as you already know, listeners, basically that means about the timetabling of the bill. So Boris Johnson wanted to have 3 days to debate this bill and pass it. Bearing in mind, I think Maastricht, for instance, took 20, 30, 40 days of debating. We spent 4 or 5 days talking about what we wanted to have this podcast about. So Boris Johnson wanted them to have... MPs to have less time debating this bill than we spent talking about the podcast about the bill itself.
Yeah, absolutely. Boris Johnson was essentially just trying to bounce the House of Commons into backing his Brexit deal. To a degree, it worked. Enough people actually backed the bill, but clearly not enough people were willing to vote for the programme motion, which, as you say, was 3 days to discuss. I think it was 100-plus pages of text, which, and it's not just a case of by reading this document you can understand everything about it, just within the context of the document. It will reference things like, we will repeal X law or whatever, or incorporate X law from European Acts, whatever, into British law in a different way. Which then means you need to go and look that up to understand what it is and what the impacts of that are.
But also, listening to Boris Johnson in the House of Commons and listening to Steve Barclay, our Brexit secretary, answering questions about the substance of the bill, about the checks on the hard border in the Irish Sea, in terms of, are they custom checks? Are they administrative? What exactly are we expecting businesses to do? It was pretty clear that neither of them really understood the full substance of the bill.
There's a bit of a thing which has kind of gone round bits of Twitter, at least, that certainly within the, kind of like the more legalistic and trade aficionados online.
The dark web, as it's known.
Yes. Boris Johnson doesn't understand what he's negotiated at all. And it could just be, whilst we called him an inveterate liar earlier, he could just be an idiot. Like, it could just be in this instance, he doesn't know what he's actually done at all, because he's never been one for details. He just knows that there's a deal that's been done, and that deal gets him out of this whole, let's go once more under the breach, dear friends, and get this battle won.
But I think also, the bigger point of Brexit and having sovereignty is that you have to think and discuss about things like trade, which we haven't had to think about for over 40 years.
Yep.
That's one of the reasons why we're having to appoint and recruit trade negotiators from other countries like New Zealand and India, because there is no specialist knowledge of this kind of stuff in the UK, because we haven't needed it.
Mm-hmm.
As you've hinted, there were 19 Labour MPs who voted for the bill at second reading, but only, I think, 4 or 5, maybe 6 Labour MPs voted for the programme motion. And they are your hardcore rebels, people like Kate Hoey, people like John Mann. Partly, I think, it's for political reasons for their constituencies. So you've got MPs who are in very Leave seats, like Ruth Smith, Gareth Snell, who want to signal to their constituents they are down with Brexit in general, but also not this Brexit in particular, but also then want to try and amend this bill. So this talk of maybe attaching a customs union to it from people like Caroline Flint.
Yep.
There's talk, the Lib Dems have tried, hello Mark, by the way, and good luck in your election. The Lib Dems have tried to attach a second referendum to the bill, and that will almost certainly come back, I would have thought, if this bill is given longer to debate. Boris Johnson understandably did not want this bill being amended to buggery. Boris Johnson's response to this then was to, first of all, apply for an extension under the terms of the Benn Act, and his devious way of sidetracking the world's media was to photocopy part of the relevant act and not sign a letter, which is fun. But basically, he did the thing he said he wouldn't do, exactly like he did at the DUP conference last year. In terms of that extension then, it looked like the EU would decide on Friday, and then it looked like they would decide on Monday, and now they're going to decide about whether they're going to have an extension on Tuesday, because they want to see whether or not on Monday the House of Commons votes for a general election. Because the second thing Johnson is doing is pushing for a general election, which obviously he can only do by putting a motion under the Fixed Term Parliaments Act. And he needs 2/3 of MPs to support this. I find Johnson's argument here incredibly confusing. Johnson and Cummings want to run a people versus parliament election, which is hard to do when the House of Commons just voted for your Brexit deal by a majority of 30.
Yep.
He's saying he wants to get his deal through, but Parliament's blocking that deal. And so therefore, because Parliament's blocking his deal, we need to have an election to stop them delaying the deal. But surely having an election and spending 6 weeks campaigning is in itself delaying
the deal longer than it would to just go through the 3 weeks or whatever it is. That would be the standard timetable for something like this.
Especially when the Benn Act asks for an extension to the end of January, which is more than enough time to debate and pass this through.
Yeah, Boris Johnson's argument on this does not make much sense at all. It's garbled and very, very messy, because essentially, they don't know what they're doing at this point. As you said earlier, they don't have a master plan anymore. They're just reacting to everything as it occurs, and they're in basically panic mode. They know that the best outcome for them is probably a general election, but at the same time, they don't know how to get it, because the Fixed Term Parliament Act is blocking that from being called, and Labour aren't going to vote for it just for willy-nilly for multiple reasons.
Well, I think it's partly that the Cummings-Johnson plan kind of fell apart. I think it's also, there are two different groups in Number 10. So you have got the Cummings kind of Maoist, let's tear all the whole thing down shtick. But then you've also got the crowd who are with Boris Johnson when he was mayor, and they actually want to govern things and keep the show on the road. And they would much rather not have an election, get this bill passed.
Yeah.
Whereas Cummings would much rather go for an election.
Yeah, and I think you can see that in multiple different areas. So multiple different Downing Street sources have been talking to the media and basically saying completely contradictory things. At one point over the past day or so, the government was going to go on strike. It was not going to put any business before Parliament at all until the Brexit situation had been resolved. That was then swatted aside by others and basically said, no, this is that's silly. There's a lot of good work that can still be done that the House agrees upon.
I think there's two reasons why Johnson's trying to push for an election. One of them is he doesn't want a Brexit bill. He doesn't want more debate on that bill because it will get amended. It's another reason why he's going for an election with a Fixed Term Parliaments Act rather than just, say, trying to get a one-line bill repealing the Fixed Term Parliaments Act or calling for an election, because people will amend that to the hilt. But then the other reason he wants an election is because he's 15 points ahead in the polls.
And almost regardless of what actually happens within, like, the actual overall result of that election, the Tory party as a result is going to be much more united, because the 21 like rebel MPs have already been kicked out. Like, they will be replaced for that general election for the most part. Maybe one or two of them end up back in the fold. You're not going to have your Dominic Grieve there as a constant thorn in your side anymore.
So Johnson's argument on a new election is quite confusing, whereas Labour's position, Steve, is a picture of clarity.
Oh, do tell, Corey.
Oh, well, that was the cue for you to speak. All right. So
you're the one that's arguing this on the doorstep.
Just because you can't be bothered to go around fighting the good fight, speaking to the good people of Selly Oak, telling them to stick with Steve McCabe. Straight talking, hard working.
No, but in all seriousness, Labour's position is equally as confused, to say the least. I know we've got some differences of opinion on this, but I do think it's still quite confused overall. Yes, you can summarise it. Why don't you just summarise it as you would on the doorstep?
What, you mean our Brexit position or our position on an election?
Both. Because they're basically one and the same in a lot of ways at this point.
Well, our Brexit position is, essentially, if we are in government, we will negotiate a soft Brexit and we'll put that to a referendum, and the choice will be between soft Brexit and Remain. Our position on an election is, under the terms of the Fixed Term Parliaments Act, Parliament cannot specify the date of election, that's up to the Prime Minister. We don't trust Boris Johnson because, as we've already said in this podcast, he will do one thing and say another thing. So it's perfectly possible that, let's say on Monday, now I think Labour have said we're going to abstain on the election on Monday. Let's say, hypothetically, we voted for an election, assuming it would be December the 12th, I think is the date they're talking about. Well, it doesn't have to be December the 12th. Boris Johnson could say to the Queen, aha, I'd like an election on 2nd of February, say. That's after the extension that's proposed under the Benn Act, which essentially means there could well be a no-deal Brexit.
Yeah.
And that's the point, is there's no trust between Labour and the Conservatives, or indeed anyone, yeah, I think, in Parliament at the moment.
Effectively, the line that's coming out from Labour is, until we know that no deal is off the table completely.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is, how you achieve that is not very clear, which means it's not necessarily very obvious when Labour would back an election, which means they're going to be running around like a headless chicken trying to basically spin this, because unless they were just going to wait until a free trade deal is struck, years, you could be in a position where we're mandated to have one just normally before we even get to a trade deal being signed. A referendum happens which resolves the issue in some capacity, or Boris Johnson's bill gets through, which he's pulled, and so it won't continue to progress. Labour haven't laid out any real specifics, which means they're going to be constantly asked now, when are you going to back an election? When are you going to back an election? It's clear that this parliament isn't working. And then they can't answer that, which means they look for it. It means they look scared, and they're looking at they're only doing it because they're behind in the polls.
Thankfully, we haven't spent the last 18 months saying that we want a general election, so that's fine. I take your point about wanting no deal off the table, because, as we've already kind of hinted, even if it used to be, how do you take no deal off the table? You vote for a Brexit deal. Well, it's even getting to the point where even if Labour was somehow to vote for a deal, or the vote for the withdrawal agreement to try and take no deal off the table, you've got the hipster's no deal of December 2020 being the cliff edge. So the only way of really taking no deal off the table is to revoke Article 50, which
there's not the votes for.
There's a few different things at play. One of them is, you've got a group of Labour MPs, which is small but growing. We seem to have John McDonnell and Rebecca Long-Bailey are now added to that number, I think, who want a referendum on Brexit before we have a general election. So there's a group of Labour MPs who, understandably, and I think this is the other thing as well, I think a good argument to make, and that's a lot of Labour MPs have been making, is a general election is generally on every issue facing the country, and that should be separated out from the issue of Brexit, which you need to have a binary referendum on.
Yeah.
You've got another group of Labour MPs in the Midlands, in the North, in what one could say are traditional Labour heartlands, which Boris Johnson and Dominic Cummings are hoping to target and pick up seats in, who are genuinely worried that they might lose their seats, which is, again, understandable. But the other thing is, just from a Labour point of view, is that candidate selections are still going on in Labour seats. We've got the trigger ballot process, which is still going through. And there's seats, say, in Vauxhall, where Kate Hoey's standing down, as you've said, but they haven't had time to select a candidate yet. Well, the NEC is going to start imposing candidates then in a lot of these seats. It's hard to say that a lot of the party's election ready because there aren't a lot of candidates in these seats yet. Yeah. So it's a very real... Same for the Tories as well, I think, in a lot of cases. But there's very good reasons to not have an election.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, there's lots of reasons to not have an election. And like from my perspective, just more generally, I think the only way you can actually put an end to this in a way which has the least amount of shenanigans and grumbling and all that is actually another referendum in some capacity. Just because at the very least then, Brexit was decided originally by a people's vote, and it's resolved by a people's vote. Hmm. Like, you can't say it's necessarily the elites or parliamentarians screwing you over when it was just the majority of people that chose to vote in that referendum just happened to disagree with you.
On Monday, as we say, there's going to be a vote under the Fixed Term Parliaments Act to see if they want an election. Now, it looks like Labour are going to abstain, so it looks like an election won't be called then. I believe I'm right in saying that the latest date that Parliament could call for an election this year is November the 7th. I think it's very unlikely, actually, we'll have a December election. If we end up with a December election, I think what will happen is, on Tuesday, Macron will kick off at the EU27. They'll ask for a two-week extension, initially. Mm-hmm. And they'll say, you've got 2 weeks to organise a democratic event. And it's going to be either a referendum or a general election. And in that instance, I can see potentially this Parliament plumping for a general election over a referendum. There's a lot of ifs and buts and maybes in that, though, I think. But it could happen, because it feels to me, certainly on an EU level, I think the EU are getting a little bit sick of it, to be honest. I think, actually, if the EU would say... I mean, the EU must know, I suppose, and the EU27 must know, well, if we ask for an extension until the end of January, what's going to happen in mid-January is the British government's going to ask for another extension.
Yeah. And I genuinely think there is a danger or a risk from our perspective, at least, where eventually the EU just go, no, sort your own crap out. We can't, you're stopping us progressing now. You're stopping us being able to focus on the things that we want to focus on as the EU, because we're having to deal with this nonsense. There will potentially become a point where they may just go, actually, yes, this hurts us, but it's going to hurt you more, and we've had time to prep for this, and you've used all your time and your goodwill. I genuinely think there is a small chance of that actually being a thing now. And I think even if we did somehow end up in a situation where we have the referendum, we vote to remain, or revoke, or Article 50 is revoked, or whatever, the EU is not going to be happy about that result. Because it just opens up just so much more problems for them, actually, in the long term.
I think there's a good case of people like, say, Guy Verhofstadt, more kind of those who believe in a greater Europe, I think actually probably would be happy at Britain staying in. I think maybe there's a few like Macron who wouldn't.
I think you probably need to draw a line between the almost like the true believers in the European project, which are your Guy Verhofstadts, that sort of ilk, versus the people who, versus your Macrons, and to a degree your Merkels as well, I suspect, who are just like, this is a practical tool rather than an ideological direction.
There was an interesting John Ellis tweet, which we probably shouldn't get into now, but saying essentially where he thought we were going was somewhere like Norway. Either, it seemed like, just in terms of the big picture stuff, either we leave on Johnson's deal or something like it, and we progressively make that hard Brexit softer and softer and softer and softer until it looks something like Norway. Or if we do end up remaining in the EU, at some point we probably do get a two-speed Europe.
And
we end up on the outer ring of that. We're not going to be in the middle of a single currency, we'll probably be on the outer wing. So it could well be, in the very, very long term, we end up in a similar place. It's just, if we go down the Johnson route and then try and soften it, we're going to have a lot of, there's going to be a lot of pain to get there. On that happy note, we are meeting again on Wednesday. We're going to try and do another episode where we answer your questions on Brexit, on Boris Johnson, on the government, on any essentially on the latest mad weeks in British politics. We did this a couple of weeks ago and it worked fairly well, so we're going to see if we can do it again. So you can tweet us. You can tweet us at NoChampagnePod, or I'm at PaperbackRioter, or
I'm at AcousticRadical.
Or you can find our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/notenoughchampagne. We also have a website, which is notenoughchampagne.com. James Cram designed our logo. You can follow him on Twitter at James Cram. And Dave Depp is responsible for our theme tune, Plucky Good Times. Happy plotting.